Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
A very warm welcome back to Parkcast, park fans. I've not said that for a while. I almost forgot what I had to say. We have been gone for a little while over Christmas and we are back. This is season four of Parkcast and we'll be here every week, almost every week at least. We'll very much try to be here every week with your weekly fix of theme park news and chatter and random gossip. I'm Bex. This is Kev.
Hi, everyone.
He's back. Did you have a good Christmas? Oh, that feels weird talking about Christmas in
Let's
February.
Not.
I can't.
How's your new year been?
It's been wonderful. I'm enjoying the sun of Saudi. It feels like a very long time ago since we recorded that Christmas quiz.
It does. I'm still laughing about.
Oh, I regularly play some of the clips from it. And hilarious. If you have missed any of the podcast episodes from season three, if this is your first time here, I mean, you're in for a treat because you can go back. You've got so much to catch up on last year. And a lot of it, actually, I'd say most of it isn't time critical. So there'll be lots of conversations there that you can go back and listen to with interesting people. Mm. Talking of interesting people, friend of the podcast, regular friend of the podcast, Lawrence is here from University Bedford.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
It's nice to be back.
Again, feels like a long time since we chatted, but given the excitement and the progress that's been made with Universal in the UK since we last spoke, and given that this is probably going to be the most exciting theme park development in the UK for quite some time, I thought it was only right to start Series 4 talking about Universal.
Ah, it's a good place to start. It's the biggest theme park development this country's ever seen. It probably is the biggest theme park development it will ever see. Yeah. So it's going to be a ride.
What you did there.
Oh, I like it. We started off well. Great.
I know.
Great dad joke.
On form.
He's back. He's back, everyone. If you haven't met Lawrence already, I've never met Lawrence, only in online, not in person.
Disappointing.
I keep driving past your house as well. I'm not calling in. It's very rude. You can find him online and he does lots of Universal updates. University Bedford is his handle, his tags. You'll find him if you search that. But also, I mean, and I'm going to take this as a compliment. I'm not taking it as a threat. You've started another podcast since I last spoke to you. And it's specifically about Universal updates.
It is. I tell you, it's called Bricking It, the Universal Studios UK podcast. So basically, there are kind of three of us local guys that are doing content about Universal Studios. So there's me, there's Universal Studios Great Britain Updates, which is a guy called Mike. And then there's Project Universal, he's the man, he's the guy in the sky. So we've been kind of meeting up, having a few beers now and again. And,
lads.
I know, right?
Boys.
We're all middle-aged men.
Middle-aged men having a beer going,
Universal.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, it's...
Come on, lads.
It's the coolest table out in the pub. We're having some beers last year and we're just chatting and we thought, we could just record this nonsense and make it a podcast. So we thought, let's see if we are greater than the sum of our parts by joining forces and putting this podcast together. And it's been great fun, to be honest. It's a good old laugh. So fun times.
Well, we're going to give an overview of what's happened since we last spoke on this episode today. But if you do want detailed Universal chat, Bricking It is the place to go to because we can't keep up with the updates as quickly as you guys. And you're very right. Project Universal, I see his videos come up and he's got his drone out or whatever he's using. He basically overlooks the field where it's being built, doesn't he? He lives overlooking it. So
he is honestly we actually record the podcast in his a cabin at the end of his garden. And where we record is about 100 meters from the West Gateway Zone. So it really is like We couldn't get much closer.
Yeah, nice. Well, make sure you go and check that out if you want real deep, nerdy Universal chat and some lads having some beers at the same time.
yes,
today, though, I mean, we're going to be much more professional. There's absolutely no alcohol being consumed. I just wanted to get an overview of what we've missed so far. So the last time we spoke to you, I think, was about September or October, and we knew that Universal had been granted a special development order, I think, which meant that they didn't need to go through the usual planning process and get all the permissions. Basically, the government was saying, we support this, off you go. That then came into force in December.
Yeah. So the SDO was kind of out there, and there was the kind of consultation period that lasted through till sort of round about the end of August, beginning of September, and then nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. No one said anything. Right?
You were scrabbling around for content.
believe me. And it was one of those really interesting
diggers on site.
Yeah, like there was. But seriously, Kev, it was like there was nothing happening. Right, nothing. It was really scraping the barrel. The best content we could come up with was sort of, oh, will the SDO be approved today or this week or this month? But then finally, I think it was the 19th of December, thereabouts, it got approved. So then it gets approved, and then you find out that actually it doesn't actually come into force for another few weeks, because then there has to be this statutory cooling off period. It's like setting up a direct debit, but bigger. We then had to wait until the 12th of January, and it's at that point that the SDO becomes law. So a little bit of a kind of a technical thing with this SEO, it's not planning permission, it's a special development order, which effectively means that it is now written into UK law that Universal are building a theme park and resort outside of Bedford, right? That's it. That's happening. And also, as like a little caveat to that, is that all of those details, and there are so many of them in that application, all of those now have to be fulfilled. That's now like the minimum that they have to hit for that park to open in spring, summer 2031.
Okay. Amazing. Is there anything in there that you're like, that's going to be an interesting one? Or is it all, does it all seem totally manageable?
It's all totally manageable. I think the bits which rely entirely on Universal are the bits that we can feel most confident about, because they've been there, they've done it. We've seen them do it with Epic, we've seen them do it with Beijing very, very recently. And when they set themselves a timeline, they'll do it. There are obviously some bits where they're going to need to integrate with external sort of third parties. So, for example, when it comes to the railways, when it comes to the roads, when it comes to the water, when it comes to the electricity, the gas, all of those bits and pieces, they are reliant then on, ordinarily, these are kind of government run third parties, so should be okay. Part of the SDO is the theme park cannot open until Wixom's train station is completed. Now, Universal won't be building Wixom's train station, but I'm sure they'll be putting quite a bit of pressure on that to be completed on time, because every day that this project is delayed is lost revenue for what is a multi-billion pound investment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a, there's nothing in there that kind of you go, no, that's never going to happen. But there's a lot in there. There's an awful lot in there.
So many things we've not really ever thought about when you start a theme park from scratch. We're so used to rides being built and the things they need to do for that. But this is entirely from scratch, isn't it?
Oh, completely. So, if we just take a little bit of a look at what's going on on the site right now. So there was a school of thought that was that when the 12th of January came around and this thing came into law, that really we wouldn't see much going on. immediately, but that's been blown out of the water. There's a lot going on already. So there's we've got all these dumper trucks that are moving earth around. We've got some pretty heavy duty excavators that
Oh.
are basically spread. Oh, yeah, right. But no, but they are
Diggers.
diggers. I mean, who doesn't love a digger? But it's fascinating what they're doing. So the core zone, which is where they're going to be building like our version of City Walk, the hotel, the theme park, they've started basically scraping the top 1 meter of soil, just scraping the whole thing off, and they're building basically a berm, a mound that encircles the core zone around there. So that's already going on. So then you mentioned, Kev, your utilities and things like that. That's going to be one of the next things we see. So they're digging all of this. They're scraping the top layer off, which then just exposes basically the clay, which is great to build on. And then what we're going to then start seeing is them digging trenches. So we're going to start to see very exciting, very nerdy stuff. But we're going to be able to see where they're going to be putting the pipes, where they're going to be putting the cables, and all of those sorts of things. And one of the things that we were chatting about on the pod just the other day was, like electricity. This is an enormous facility. At the moment, the electrical, supply to that area basically supports about 15 homes, right? It's going to need to be bumped up quite significantly. So they're going to have to either rely on, was it National Grid? I don't know. Those people.
It must
So
be,
yeah,
yeah.
that sounds right. To build a new
That
substation,
must be right.
or expand another station, substation just in one of the nearby villages in Master Mortain, just so that then there's sufficient electric flow to the site. And then on the other side of the road, in what's called the Lake Zone, which is going to be, there's going to be a kind of utility compound there. There's also going to be energy storage. There's going to be energy generation there, so that they've got mitigation against like power cuts and stuff like that. There's so much going on here. It's kind of like watching someone play halfway between like a Roller Coaster Tycoon or Planet Coaster build. But actually, right now, it's a little bit like, I don't know if it's kind of like a SimCity kind of, that kind of situation. Because actually, like what they need right now is all of that stuff that you never see, you never think about, you only notice when it goes wrong. And that's what they're having to focus on right now. So that's going to take probably us through until, I reckon, middle of next year, where we're going to be just seeing them putting pipes in and doing all of that business. But I think we will see some things that will give us some indications about how the theme park is going to be laid out. I think we will see some of that, which is going to be really, really interesting.
See how it compares to those designs that were unveiled. Do you know what you might get as well with, if you're talking about like substations and all that, you might get some abnormal loads coming in.
Oh
Well,
my goodness.
that would be exciting for you, wouldn't it?
We've already had some abnormal loads. We've had some abnormal loads.
Like the 16-wheel ones, was it one of those?
So like that's another one, right? So that's something as well that needs to be considered, because the reason this site was chosen is because it's so close to two railways, one that goes from the east to west, one that goes from north to south, and vice versa. It's kind of on those not crossroads, cross rails, I suppose you'd say, but it because of that, there are two. There's one level crossing that's actually in the middle of the site between the core zone and the lake zone. That's a level crossing, and then there's another one which is just kind of out on the other side of the core zone. And because of the way the roads are, everything that goes into the site at the moment has to cross the level crossing. And this is like really going down the rabbit hole stuff, right? But if you cross the level, if you're a heavy goods vehicle or an abnormal load and you've got to cross a level crossing, you've got to call, you have to stop, you have to call up the network, the railway operator, and go, "Hey, by the way, I'm just going to drive a dumper truck over it." And then they have to check, oh, has anything fallen off? Has it damaged the tracks? Has it done any of this? So then it falls then back into, okay, now we need Network Rail to sort out their bit and build a bridge over the rail, like the whole thing. There's
Oh,
so many moving parts.
yeah.
And it's really hard to know, kind of like some of it's a bit chicken and egg, right? But yeah, fascinating stuff.
I'll tell you what else is fascinating. I mean, there was an article that was out, I think, on BBC the other day, talking about how will the theme park possibly cope with the amount of people visiting, and needing to use the toilets. Which is
Right.
always a
Yes.
lovely positive story when we're talking about building, like, probably the UK's greatest theme park.
Yeah.
But I mean, any truth in that? Any worry in that?
Well, I'm glad the BBC thought of it because I'm sure Universal hadn't thought that people needed
Yes,
to.
exactly.
Oh,
All those flushes at the same
yeah.
time. What are you going
Right.
to do?
We don't want
Right.
a Forbidden Valley repeat of the
No. Lawrence's
Toxicator launch.
house comes back home. Lawrence's house is.
I'm on a hill, you know,
Oh,
I
okay.
might then just be surrounded by a moat of the stuff. But no, I think this is like British journalism. It's a perfect case study of British journalism. It's like we've got a nice thing here. We've got a nice thing. Let's try and find a way of tearing it down. Okay. It doesn't matter how ridiculous that is. Let's find a way of tearing it down. Okay. What's the most? All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sewage. That will get people talking. Right. Okay. So we did this little calculation over on the Brick in It pod, because I was absolutely incensed by this article. It's a lot, I believe. I think it's in the millions.
According to the BBC, they reckon 10.6 million litres of foul discharge
Nice.
would be sent per day.
Okay. Right.
That sounds
10
like a lot.
10.6 million litres of foul discharge from a theme park. Right, okay.
Which makes it sound worse.
Let's do that. Yeah. Let's
Slight
do the
discharge is not a good word, sorry.
No,
It's sorry, it's
not the
just not a good
one.
word.
It's not the one. Look, so like just I'm going to kind of do a very quick maths situation here. We reckon there's going to be what, 50,000 people at the site on a busy day. So we just divide 10.6 million litres by the number of people in the park. That's a fair assumption. That still means that each person that goes through the gates is going to be generating 212 litres of foul discharge. Okay, now I'm going to add a little bit more to this. Okay, so I know because I looked it up how many litres the average flush is. Okay, so if you're flushing the toilet, say you're just doing a number one, but you're still flushing. Okay, that's gonna you're bouncing between 5 and 10 liters there. Okay, so what we're gonna do, we'll divide that then by 10 because you know that's a number of it's
That's
fine. That
scientific.
still means it's scientific. It still means that each person will need to use the toilet 21.2 times per day for the BBC to make those numbers. So,
Wow.
And that is science.
Yes.
There we
Science.
go.
Science. Welcome
So,
back to podcast, everyone.
how many
This
episode
times do you
has
use the
not
toilet?
gone.
Right? How many times do you use the toilet each
Oh no,
day?
I'm going to decline to answer that question.
Listeners,
But it's
okay.
not
We're going
20.
to do a toll. We're going to do like, yeah, we're going to see. Listeners, could you make a record of how many times? And we'll work out from that
We'll
every
work out the
day for the next
average.
3 years.
I mean, I might be in the
Like,
minority here, but I don't go to the toilet 20 times a day.
I think if you do, if you're listening to that and thinking, yeah, that sounds about right, make an appointment. Like, go
Yeah.
and see your
Honestly, yeah.
GP.
Like being like clockwork on the hour every hour is not a good thing in this instance. But like, you know, I said when I was talking about it before, I said like, you know, what are you going to do? Oh, look, I really want to get on the Back to the Future coaster, but the queue is 90 minutes and I've got three scheduled toilet breaks in that time.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah.
It's the whole thing is ridiculous. Don't expect this to be the end of it.
No.
There will be so many more ridiculous news stories that will be popping up over the next 6 years and beyond.
Yeah.
Go on, Kev, you got
something. Well, there was one that came up, like, what, 2 days ago on the BBC again about fears raised that the roads won't cope as well.
Oh, yeah.
So they've already started... put in all the articles about the road structures now, and got people saying about they're concerned about the number of road users, and they put a thing about they reckon about what 40% of people getting there will be by car.
That's
so
right.
you know there's yeah. seems like that's come up as a negative news article. I mean, again,
yeah, 100%, right? So, you know, again, if you got if 40% of 50,000, you know, that's 20,000 people that are going to be coming per day in a car. They're hopefully they'll be sharing, some of them at least. Universal will make good money out of that, because I think to park it's going to cost about 37 quid a day.
Ooh,
enjoy that.
Oh, it suddenly seems cheap.
I know.
Yes, I'm going to be going on my penny farthings.
So I would love to see that.
Now that would be amazing.
But like, yeah, again, like Kev, actually, that's actually a reasonable one. Now, it has been, there is so much in the SDO about that, but I think it is a reasonable conversation to be having. Does the SDO go far enough? Because the SDO only really covers Universal's responsibilities, and there are, again, I know this is a theme park podcast, right? But you know, there are so many conversations to be had about Bex's favourite Black Cat roundabout, about Junction 13 on the M1, about all of these different like touch points that if you're going to go to the park, you're either going to go via the Black Cat roundabout or Junction 13 on the M1. The Black Cat, they are fixing. I actually think that will be okay in about a year.
In 5 years' time, it might be okay. It's been going on for 15.
it's always been rubbish. But Junction 13, I use that one quite a lot on the M1. And that, if I want to get on or off the motorway, I have to go through three roundabouts.
Yeah. It's not so straightforward, that one.
It's not a very ergonomic jump.
Yeah, because you don't come straight off and then onto the road that cuts past Universal. You kind of have to, you come off the slip road. Oh, this is so boring. I'm so sorry. And you go over one and then you could go straight on somewhere else. And the amount of people are in the wrong lanes because
you can get on the A421 two different routes from the same junction. It's just,
I mean,
the whole
what a nightmare.
Ridiculous. So anyway, but like Kev, you're absolutely right. Like the roads are genuinely a bit of a problem, and they're a problem already. So I think we're going to need to see some movement there. But that falls on the council, and the council will hopefully be getting some funding from the government to get that sorted. Because that of all of the things, I think that is probably the valid discourse to be having, the valid concerns to be having. The other things, they're all right, they're taken care of, but
roads are always a problem. Coaches, buses as well, taxis are going to be bringing people from railway stations. So I understand it. I just find it like we there's always going to be a mix, isn't there, we're going to try and bring the positive, you know, information over. There's always going to be negative, because I think that's just the way that the media works, isn't it, in the UK with stuff, isn't it?
We can't just have nice things. We have to find something to moan about.
Of course. And you know what? Like, I think it is important to talk about the downsides as much as it is the upsides, because there's always a kernel of truth in everything. And nothing is ever 100% good, right? Never, right? And they'll, even if we kind of keep it strictly limited to kind of rides and attractions and the experience of being there on day one, there'll be some things that aren't perfect on day one, right? Our expectations as enthusiasts are going to be sky high, and we're still going to be blown away, and we're going to be probably a little bit emotionally touched by the whole experience when we go there for the first time, right?
Oh yeah.
But There'll always be a bit of us which will be hopping on Reddit and having a good old moan about something, going, oh, churro weren't great or whatever.
And we won't know until it opens. This is the thing as well. We
Yeah.
can plan, they can plan all this in, I guess, but until it actually opens, all these are estimated numbers, aren't they? You
Indeed.
know, so
They're best case
then,
scenarios.
yeah,
Or
and
they're
so,
best guesses, you're right.
and they might have to then change stuff when it opens because they've gone, oh, we've not done enough of this or that. So I guess
Yes.
we'll have a bit more negative.
Hopefully we'll have some positive surprises in there as well, right?
Oh,
Some
I'm
really,
sure we
really
will.
pleasant surprises.
And it's just going to be so different from what else we've got. So yeah, there's going to be so much
Pretty much.
positive in it. What is, you live very close to it, so what is the local vibe at the moment? Because it was overwhelmingly positive before the SDO got granted and when this was getting talked about. Is that still the case, or are people starting to get a little bit twitchy?
No one's twitchy. Everyone's buzzing about it.
That's good.
Genuinely, everyone's really excited about it. And we've already started to see some benefits already as local people. So one of the things that obviously is going to start popping up all over the place are going to be more hotels, more restaurants, all of those sorts of things. I've mentioned this before, but Bedford is, if you just imagine your local town and how kind of depressing the high street is, that's Bedford, right? It's got beautiful potential, but it's just not what it was 20, 30 years ago. What we've started to see, particularly, it's not quite reached the town centre yet, but if you kind of like, if you think of like a little kind of a radius expanding from the site, we're starting to see a lot of investment. So there, again, this is really exciting stuff. But there's a little retail park, right? Well, it was little. It's now massive, and it's got like the. We just had like six new restaurants open down there, and like all of this stuff is happening because they know, get in there now, build up a bit of local trade. But in 6 years, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine because you're half a mile away from the UK's largest tourist destination. So people are starting to see the benefits of that. I'd be lying if I said that everyone was positive about it. Some people have this going, like the construction site, basically outside their bedroom window, right? They look out their bedroom window, and to the three of us, and probably you listening, you might think that is a dream, right? But there are some ordinary, normal people out there in the world,
It's
and
not, well,
those
the enthusiasts
ordinary,
haven't moved to Bedford yet, have they?
they haven't.
Let's get
They
this
have.
clear.
Right. So like there are some roads in the village of Stewartby, which is the closest kind of largish village to the site. There are some roads where the back garden ends and it's universal land. And it's not just like, oh, that will be the nature reserve that they're going to build. That's going to be either the car park, or it's going to be the hotel, or it's in that core zone. So those people, they're dealing with a very different situation that's quite unique and personal to them. So, and that's fair enough. I'm not going to say they shouldn't feel like that because, they're absolutely within their rights to. But as a general rule, everyone is super, super positive about it. And I think, we're really just kind of counting the days until we can start to really feel the benefits of it.
And what's the communication like? Between Universal and the local villages, is there much communication? Do they get given much warning about stuff, or is there literally just nothing at all?
There was an awful lot during the consultation period. And then when the SDO was filed and the application went in, there was actually a kind of a legal prohibition of Universal to make public statements, so they couldn't. Now it's all approved. We haven't seen anything in particular, right? But it is kind of being it's being managed in collaboration with the council. So Universal have actually just taken over an entire floor of the council offices. So somebody sent me a picture in WhatsApp. I don't know what they were doing in the council offices, but they managed to blag themselves onto the Universal floor, and they
Amazing.
just sent me this picture, and it just kind of had these like enormous posters of Minions and Jurassic World and all of that sort of stuff. I'm like, this is
Wow.
nuts. So those two organizations are very, very closely working together to ensure that there is minimal disruption for people. We what like Universal don't want to upset people. They don't want to upset the locals, but at the same time, they need to get stuff done. They need to make it happen. So there's a balance to be had. But I don't think anyone can complain about the level of communication that's been there. It's been good up to this point. But then I don't think they're going to be kind of like posting in the local Facebook group going, all right, boys, just to let you know, we're going to be driving 50 tons of absolute garbage through your village over the next 13 days or whatever. So I don't. They're not going to be kind of engaged on a minute level, but so far so good. And I mean, one of the things as well, just in terms of kind of keeping local people happy, is they are obliged by the SDO to make 70% of their hires from the local area. Okay. Now, when that was first announced, I thought, great, okay, that'll be, maybe some ride ops, but it will be mostly kind of like cleaning, janitorial staff, serving, restaurant, that kind of thing. But what we've actually seen is it's been at the high skilled specialist levels as well. So I don't know if, so Bradley Wynne, who was the creative lead on Wicker Man, he has been brought in to be the creative lead on the park.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So he's basically like, and he's a local guy. He lives about, I don't know, 6 or 7 miles from the site. And
Okay.
he always did. So it's kind of like one of those things. It's like, well, I'm here, I can do the job.
Yeah.
And Universal said, great, great
That's
to have
so
you on
cool.
board. And there's been a few more of those as well. And they really want to work with local businesses. And like generally, they're doing everything right, I think. I can't imagine anything for them to do more probably would be really arduous and tedious for them, to be honest.
It is amazing. You see the job adverts coming through thick and fast, really, for those high level jobs. Like even today, I think I've seen two or three. And you'd think, in some ways, it's like, wow, they want that already. But I suppose you have to have those people in position at this very early stage, so that they see the whole construction project through, and they are there to bring up any issues at this point, not when it's too late.
Sure. I mean, and this is the thing, like we used to, theme park construction projects in this country, kind of maybe having a kind of a run of about maybe 2, 2.5 years.
Yeah.
We see like the planning applications drop in. There's probably been about 3 to 6 months ahead of that that was kind of surveying and stuff. And then we see construction begin probably the season before the opening. So, we're used to that sort of lead time. Now, if we work backwards, 2031's opening day, that means that if they were going to follow the UK schedule, they would need to have everything nailed down and have a good idea of what they needed to do by the end of 2028. But the reality is, they aren't going to be building UK attractions. They're going to be building Universal attractions. And we know that the lead time on those is going to be a lot longer. As well as that, they also need to start planning and building the infrastructure around those rides. So, it's not going to, it would be kind of amateur hour for them if they were to go, right, we're going to make the biggest, best dark ride in the world. And then start thinking about that in 2028. They got to start thinking about that now because they're going to need to know how much size, how much space they need, what sort of facilities they need, what the layout's going to be. They need to talk to the manufacturers. They need to, because Universal are always very good at using new technology as well. So there's a lot going in. And we've seen this with Universal. It takes them sometimes like 4 or 5 years to have an idea to make it happen. And this is what we're going to have to get used to with Universal Studios in the UK.
I suppose there's a few rides, isn't there, that they, if we look at the Jurassic Park indoor, which we think is going to be the dark ride that's similar to the one in Beijing, I suppose that one they've kind of already, if they're going to use the same blueprint, that one is slightly easier. But what's exciting, I think, for us is the new things that we won't have seen at any Universal Park. That's obviously going to be take a bit more of that creativeness that you know, which is exciting. It's nice to have a few, I don't want to say cut and paste, but do you know what I mean? Like, there's going to be like the, we're talking about the Back to the Future roller coaster here, which isn't going to appear anywhere else.
No.
That's going to take probably longer, isn't it? In terms of, particularly if you think about who the manufacturer for the coaster is, the design of that and the theme in and all that kind of stuff, that's going to take a long time. Like you say, it's going to need to be started all now, isn't it, really?
Oh, definitely. And I think there's an argument to say. So that's a really good one to talk about. Because that's going to be, for a lot of people, that's going to be the sort of the big one that gets people chatting about this part. Now, I have a theory that if you look at what they're doing currently in Hollywood, opening this year, in Orlando opening next year, you have Fast and Furious Hollywood Drift, right? Which are two different layouts, but the same model of coaster. It's a new model of coaster by Intamin. That's kind of a little bit of a riff on that controlled spin that you get at Cosmic Rewind, but it uses automobiles, cars as the cars in the roller coaster train, right? And they can spin and turn around. I cannot think of a more perfect fit as a ride system for a Back to the Future DeLorean link up than that ride system. Now, they're going to be ironing out the creases with that ride system in Hollywood, in Orlando, and those are good. They're top rides. They're going to be incredible rides. But we think, at least by looking at the concept art, that what we're going to get is going to be bigger, faster, more intense. So I think like there is a lot of joined up thinking where we're not necessarily going to see rides that appear at the UK because they are somewhere else, but we'll see like maybe amalgamations of a little bit of this ride and a little bit of that ride fused together, and then we end up with what we have in the UK. So yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how it all shakes out.
When I saw that spike on the Orlando version, I was like, hang on a minute. I swear I've seen something like that on some concept art. So yeah, I think you could be onto something there. The other thing that people are now talking about, which has come a bit out of the blue, is Pokemon, because Universal came out and said every Universal park's going to have an element of Pokemon.
Right,
That
catch them
wasn't
all,
anything
right?
that has ever been mentioned from the concept art. It's not something that's ever occurred to any of us, I don't think. Do you think now that probably is one of those areas?
I think I'm not sure if it will take up an entire land. I wonder if we do get Nintendo, if it will be Nintendo with Pokemon, right? Like those two will kind of sit
Yeah, makes sense.
together. They have like a similar palette. They've got a similar art style. They would work well together. I think if you had them as two separate, distinct lands on opposite sides of the park, it would maybe be a bit confusing. So I think like you might see two mini lands that become one big Nintendo, including Pokemon. Where that would go on our concept art, and obviously our concept art, it is concept art, right? It's an idea. Now, where I see it could go is potentially where we've kind of assumed that's Illumination with Minions and Super Silly Fun Land and all of that. I think it could potentially go over there. I don't see it replacing the likes of Jurassic World. I don't see it replacing Hill Valley. I don't see it replacing Wizarding World slash Lord of the Rings, whatever it is, bit. And I don't like it because you'd be then just replacing a slightly more thrill-centric environment with another family environment. So I could see it replacing Minions. I don't think it will replace Paddington because I think Paddington is one of those it's so quintessentially British. I think it's just too good to be true. Yeah, and I'm not sure. I think Minions is I think of all of them, that's the most expendable. And what are we going to get? Like Minion Mayhem? No thanks. Like if you're going to copy and paste rides, do the good ones. Do you know
I think that's
what I
that's
mean?
what I was thinking. I think particularly because for me, Pokemon has, it's been 30 years since I played it on Game Boy. And it's still,
Yeah,
is it
bit
30
trivial
years?
though.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure it's been like
That
30
sounds
years
about
since
right.
Red and Blue came
Yeah, it
out
was
on the
like
Game Boy and
96
there's
or
little
so, wasn't
curve
it?
like
Yeah,
playing on the Game Boy. It feels like that. It has that ability to keep going. Because we've talked about it, haven't we, with IPs, haven't we? The past, the ones that don't work are the ones because they go old and people go, why is that still here? Whereas Pokemon is just still, popular.
Because I think you're absolutely right. There's a reason why 25 years after the first Fast and Furious movie, we're finally going to get good rides for it.
I
25 years after the first movie. Now, there's always exceptions that prove the rule. And I'm going to talk to you now about Waterworld. Now, we talked a little bit about Waterworld. I'm going to keep it brief. I'm going to keep it brief. But yeah, over on Bricking It, we were having a chat with Alicia Stella, who's obviously like I don't know, she's plugged into the Matrix over there, man.
She's a
She
legend.
knows it. And I said, so I was like, look, I think this is Waterworld, but these other guys, they're not convinced. And she's like, no, it's Waterworld.
Oh,
Really?
that, I mean, I'm going to take that as 100% confirmation.
It's 100% confirmation. If she says
If
it's
Alicia
true,
says it's
right?
true.
If Alicia says it's true, it's true. So, but then again, like that's one of those IPs that like you it like the ride or the attraction, I suppose, the show has a stronger IP than the movie ever had.
You speak to
Which is mad.
any non-theme park nerd, if you said, "Oh, they're going to build a Waterworld-themed attraction," they'd be like, "What?
What?
What? A,
Of
they've never heard of the
course not.
film, or B, they're like, why would they build anything after that terrible film?" So it does seem crazy, and it also seems crazy still to me that you wouldn't capitalize on James Bond
I
in
know.
a UK Universal.
Oh,
But I mean, if
I'm
Alicia
sure.
said
No,
it,
I
you
would have gone
might.
with James Bond.
Right. Well, I'm gonna, politely disagree. I'm gonna go with Waterworld because I love that show. But here's a world where we all win because I am very confident that as long as they can iron out any wrinkles with the licensing, that we will see a version of the Bourne Stuntacular repurposed for
Okay.
007. Right, because if you think about it, that is a far more appropriate format for 007 because like you've got a lot more control over effects. You can also show clever kind of computer effects as well as part of that presentation. So I would be I'd be looking to see that appear probably quite near the entrance as you walk through the gates, 100 yards down the way, turn right, and you'd be looking at it.
Yeah, because if you think of Paddington, we talk about Paddington being that quintessential British, you say James Bond. If you were to do like a general survey with people in the UK and say Waterworld, like Bex is saying, that people aren't going to really get it. Maybe in America, because if you live in America, you probably have visited Orlando and you've seen the stunt shows. So there's that kind of nostalgic feel about it. Whereas over here, there's nothing really like that over here. There's nothing like that. The closest I can think of was they had the stunt show in Disneyland Paris they used to do. That's probably people have seen something like that, but they wouldn't have seen anything at a UK park.
Not of that scale. I mean,
no.
arguably, Waterworld is more topical now than it ever has been because it's ultimately about climate change. I think you make a really good point, though, Kev. I think it doesn't, it won't resonate with people. It's just whether or not the attraction is good enough that it will build a reputation here as well. And don't like there's a whole generation of Orlando park goers, people that have traveled to Florida from the UK that have not experienced Waterworld, right? They missed the boat. And my wife is one of them, and she doesn't get it. She doesn't get it. She's like, why? I'm like, babe, just
Trust me. Just go
Yeah.
with me on this one.
Watch a YouTube video, man. Here's your homework.
Well, Lawrence, it's been amazing as always to get the lowdown from you. I know that these updates are going to come thick and fast. So, like we said, if you want detailed digger updates, pipework laying, abnormal load spotting, you can find all of that over on Lawrence's new podcast with his lads, which is the Breaking It podcast. And you do that weekly, don't you?
Yeah, there's a new one every Wednesday. It will drop into your feed first thing.
So there you go. You can listen to podcast, whack, break it in on after. Oh, afterwards, obviously. Do
Yeah,
of
course.
let's.
Whet your appetite with the theme park chat, and then you go into the full-on Universal chat.
The deep dive.
We will undoubtedly catch up with you again soon because I'm sure lots more exciting stuff is going to happen. If you have any questions for Lawrence, just fire them my way and I'll put them to him. If you have not already, if this is your first time listening to podcast, if you enjoyed it, hit subscribe. We're here every week, but at least then you're going to get a notification. If you don't already, come and follow me over on the old social channels as well, on Instagram and TikTok. There's always loads of chat going on there. And if you'd like to leave us a review, we always read them as well. Try and leave a nice one, otherwise we get sad.
Sorry, Bex, can I just jump in there? Because I think some like what everyone needs to do right now, you need to open your podcast app of choice. And if you look through the interface enough, hopefully you'll see 5 stars that are already filled in. But if you don't, if you look at them and you think they're not filled in already, you want to hit the one furthest to the right. Okay. You hit that one furthest to the right and then you press submit. And it's like magic, magical stuff that happens then, right? Just do what I say.
You heard the man.
Listen to Lawrence.
We will be back next week with another episode. For now, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.